You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. So welcome to episode 285, and in this one I got back on Dr. Michael Greenberg. Michael is a licensed clinical psychologist, and in this particular episode we talk about somatic OCD, also called sensory motor OCD, so you'll hear those terms used interchangeably. But in this episode Michael reflects on his first episode, and he reviews a couple of the things he said. We talk about Michael's articles. What is somatic or sensory motor OCD? We briefly touch on depersonalization and derealization. How rumination can maintain somatic symptoms. The difference between awareness and attention and why this is important. He reads his exercise from the article, How to Stop Paying Attention. We discuss the six things that get in the way when trying not to ruminate. He discusses how he treats somatic or sensory motor OCD. We talk about removing, analyzing, and avoidance. We discuss mindfulness and why this may be problematic for OCD in his opinion. We discuss practicing reducing rumination and much, much more. Now, Michael asked me to share with you this, which is that the ideas Michael shares are for your information only and do not constitute clinical advice or establish a patient-psychologist relationship. Please also note that these ideas are theories based on Michael's clinical experience but have not been empirically proven, and that rumination-focused ERP as a whole is a new and evolving approach to ERP that has not yet been researched, and therefore to the extent that it differs from classical ERP is not evidence-based. So wide-reaching episode. I really enjoyed this one. I think whether you have somatic or sensory motor OCD or not, I think you'll get a lot out of this episode. It's definitely an extension from the first two I did with him. And thanks always to NoCD for supporting the show. I deeply appreciate it. If you want to find out more about NoCD and their therapy services, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And thanks to you guys, as always, for listening. I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Michael. Welcome back to the show, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you back on. And obviously going to talk about sensory motor OCD or somatic OCD today. But before we do that, is there anything, updates or anything like that worth sharing, do you think, based on our last two episodes or just generally about you?
Actually, this wasn't planned, but I appreciate your asking me. I have, I think, two things I would want to share. Number one is, actually, let me make it three. Cool. Okay, so one of them is that I updated the How to Stop Ruminating article, and it has a lot more substance and guidance to it. So anybody who read the original version can check that out. It gives you a lot more guidance about how to stop ruminating. That's number one. And then given the opportunity, there are a couple of things from the first time that I was on the podcast that that I would want to bring up. One is that I made a comment about length of treatment, and I said that, like, I didn't think it should take a year. And I regret saying that because every case is different and some cases do take a year. And the intention behind that is that sometimes things are taking a long time because the methodology you're using isn't working. And if you feel like you're just kind of going in circles and not getting better, then that's a problem. But I definitely have had cases, whether it's because of a comorbidity or whether because it's just the nature of the person or the case, where it's more of a war of inches. And the person is making progress and we are moving, and it's just a slower paced, more incremental process. And I think it's important that I correct that. Again, I do think a lot of cases should be a lot quicker than they are, if you're really sharp about the methodology. So that's still true, but I don't want to say that globally. Does that make sense? Personally have cases that have taken and take a longer time, and I don't think that's because I don't think that's because something is being done wrong. Hmm. Okay, so that's number one. And then number two is, in the first episode also, I think I was talking about aiming for all the way better. And I was saying that in contrast to the idea that OCD is a chronic condition in the sense that you're going to have symptoms mm-hmm. for the rest of your life. And compared to the idea, I was trying to speak against the idea that a person is just always going to be sick, always going to be suffering for the rest of their life, maybe to a lesser degree.
Yeah.
And that that's just something they have to get used to. That's what I meant by that's not the goal, and that's not an acceptable goal. And we want to get a person all the way better. But at the same time, by all the way better, I don't mean that a person is never going to have a moment or never going to have a day or an hour or a trigger where they get upset. And even personally, I think of myself as I don't deal with OCD on a regular basis. It's not a part of my every day, not even a part of my every week. It's really not a problem for me anymore. And it is also the case that I also have moments. I also have like a trigger that comes up and I am not on my best behavior rumination wise. And I go down the rabbit hole also. So I never meant to say anything misleading. I never meant to say that I never have a moment. What I meant to say is that I don't think this should be a chronic condition in the sense that you are just chronically suffering. I think this is something that should be largely not an issue, even if there's the occasional moment. And even in those moments, you should know exactly what to do to get yourself through them and out of them. Yeah. And so even those moments should be few and far between. And even in those moments, you should know exactly what to do to handle it. Yeah. Does that make sense?
It does.
It's in contrast to people who think you're just going to have symptoms for the rest of your life. And at the same time, I didn't mean to portray it as like a cure or anything like that. I think to the extent that you eliminate compulsion and avoidance, you're going to be better from OCD. And to the extent that you revert to bad habits in a moment of fear or whatever, or something sneaks up on you, to the extent that you don't eliminate compulsion and avoidance, you can be back in it. So I hope that's... I think that's an important clarification.
Hmm. No, thank you for that. You said there was a third one?
I think that was it.
Okay.
Three, the time, length of treatment, what it means to be all the way better. And then, and the article was the third one.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I appreciate the clarifications. And I think something I noticed through doing the podcast is, especially when you get carried away in the moment, which is, I think that's one of the best conversations I had, but we're not detailing our thought processes in a very articulate way at times. And that's not the right phrase because you were very articulate, but we haven't thought about everything, all the different nuances and subtleties and
And you also don't think about all the different ways that somebody could interpret what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely.
But at the same time, you are responsible for all the different ways that a person interprets what you're saying, but you don't want to constantly be cutting yourself off and providing disclaimers. But having listened to that and thought, oh, that's not quite what I meant, I'll take the opportunity to clarify.
Yeah, it also raises the point to me of like working with a trained professional, because then you have that relationship, you build that rapport, you get to know the client, the client gets to know the therapist, and it's tailored to the individual 100%. Whereas like a podcast or a book, it's written for the masses, and someone's always going to get missed or the message doesn't land right.
That's also why it takes me so long to write the articles that I write. There are, a lot of ideas that I have to share that I could share verbally with someone on the street in about a minute, but writing the article version means thinking about all of the different nuances and saying it exactly as you want to say it and thinking about how it's going to be interpreted and misinterpreted. And it's a much more arduous process.
Yes.
So anyway, there was one other thing I wanted to add, in this direction. I think something else that's happened over the past however long it's been since we initially did the first podcast, mm-hmm. is that people think that my approach is magic, and it's not, right? It's not like if you stop ruminating magically, your problems go away. There's still a lot of depth to people and a lot of nuance to treatment. And I do think that eliminating rumination and eliminating compulsion and avoidance are where it's at. But there's still more depth to a person and their symptoms. There can still be underlying emotional and relational issues that I think need to be addressed as part of the treatment. So when people think of me as people, it kind of goes together. There's an idealization of the treatment. And then there's also thinking of me as the guy who's just like, stop ruminating and that's it. And like, I'm not the guy, I'm the opposite of that. I'm actually more towards the, you know, emotionally, relationally focused perspective on OCD. I think that not ruminating is a starting point and that then treatment goes from there. It's not that that's the totality of the treatment.
Yeah, I fully agree. And it's kind of the direction of the podcast currently of talking about the wonders of ERP, be it traditional inhibitory learning, your ideas or any others, and then going on the more relational stuff. What other stuff is kind of holding us back and working on that, but kind of getting symptom reduction, not entirely, trying to at least learning to symptom reduction or learning to live, to use. I know how you feel. I'm talking about an ACT lens, you know, living your life anyway with anxiety.
I'll go for a symptom reduction.
Okay, fair enough. But yeah, no, I agree. There's much more going on. So I appreciate that comment. The other thing, we will get to somatic OCD. Anyone who's got somatic OCD right now is like, can you guys just shut up and get to the point?
Sorry, yeah.
But the thing I like about your articles, I haven't read them all, but you know, I've read quite a few, is, as you said, that process they're very boiled down. You've burnt off the fat, so to speak, and it's there, the meat and nothing else is, and I quite like that.
I appreciate it. That's what takes time.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, let's get into somatic OCD. I'm sure most people familiar, but if not, what is somatic OCD, sensory motor OCD? How would you describe it?
Mm-hmm. People, I think you and I should make a decision now about whether we're going to give any examples. This is the one place where I'm kind of inclined to not talk in specific because I don't want to get anybody, stuck focused on something.
Okay.
So what do you think? I mean, I think that anybody who gets into it can get out of it. I think it's very possible to get out of somatic OCD, but at the same time, I wouldn't want somebody listening to this to have a new thing to latch onto. Do you want to decide that we're not going to give examples, or what do you think?
I was going to say give examples only because I think this podcast triggers people all the time.
Regardless. Okay. So trigger warning, we're going to talk about all sorts of things that people can get fixated on. And yeah. Okay. And so if that's going to be a problem for you, then, you know, make a decision about whether you want to listen to that. Okay. So with that being said, sensory motor is the most common, sensory motor is writ large, people call it hyper awareness. I would specifically not call it that. I would call it hyper attention. Sensory motor is when a person they can't stop noticing or paying attention to some aspect, some like autonomic function, like breathing, but not necessarily even that, any aspect of their body. It could be something like, I can't stop noticing that I can see my nose. It could be, I can't stop noticing other people blinking. I can't stop noticing myself breathing. Those are in the most common cases, but I would think more broadly about sensory motor or sort of this model, even though the word sensory motor is about body stuff, or somatic is about body stuff, I think that this same model applies to other things. Like some people have an intrusive thought, but what bothers them, it's not that they're trying to figure something out. They are, everybody, but they're bothered by the very existence of that thought. They can't stop paying attention to that thought, and that it's not about, am I going to kill someone, or what if I'm a pedophile, or how do I know if I'm in the right relationship? It's about just this thought is there and it's going to bother me that it's there and I can't stop. What do? I can't stop paying attention to it, et cetera. So a sensory motor case is a case where the primary issue is this thing that's there that you can't stop paying attention to. Okay. Whether that's a body thing or not. So far, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. This also gets into depersonalization and derealization. I want to be very clear that I think there are different presentations of DPDR. And I think sometimes there is an OCD-like component where the fact that you are paying attention to feeling not real or feeling like you're not in your body, it itself generates those feelings. But I think that there are definitely cases where the DP, the depersonalization or the dissociation is primary, where it exists for its own emotional reasons, and that have nothing to do with it. It's not because you're paying attention to it. And then there are cases where it's totally just because you're paying attention to it, just like whatever. And then I think that there are, and I don't want to present myself as having seen too many of these cases. I have worked with some, and I have personal connections to this issue. So I've read a lot about it. But I'm not an expert on this, but I think there are some where it's primary, it's for an emotional reason. There are some where it's purely coming from an OCD place. And then I think there are in-between cases where it's emanating from an emotional, it's serving a defensive purpose. It's coming from an emotional need, but that it is probably exacerbated by the hyperattention to those issues. So it's sort of a footnote on depersonalization. Where were we? Okay, so that's sort of a definition. Is that a good starting point? Was that the question?
It was, yeah. Another question I had was, and I'm not sure why I'm asking you this, but somatic OCD obsessions can be called neutral obsessions. I just wonder what your thought was on the term neutral obsessions.
Well, that means it's not the content of the thought that is the problem. The person, it's not neutral in the sense that the person is still afraid, but what they're afraid of is getting stuck on it. Or what they're afraid of is that it won't go away. It's not that they're afraid that their blinking will kill them. It's that they're afraid that they won't be able to stop paying attention to it. And therefore that will have whatever consequence it has, whatever their core fear is.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So before we get into how sensory motor works, I think it's important to talk about awareness versus attention. So first of all, let's say that there are these four cognitive processes. There's a thought occurring to you, which you cannot control. There is a thought being in awareness without directing attention to it. It's just there, right? There's directing attention and there's analyzing, analysis. You can't push something out of your awareness. And to the extent that you try to push it out of awareness, you keep it in awareness. Because in the process of trying to push it out, you are directing attention towards it. And if you're directing attention towards something, obviously it can't leave your awareness. Make sense?
Yep.
So far, so good? Okay. So what's going on in, or let me add to that, if you remove your attention from something, that doesn't automatically mean that that thing will leave your awareness, but it's like opening your hand so the bug can fly away. It doesn't mean the bug is going to immediately fly away, but if your hand is closed, if you're directing attention, there's no way that it can fly away. There's no way that that thing can leave your awareness. If you open up your hand, if you let go of attention, then that doesn't mean immediately it's leaving, but it sets the stage. It opens up the possibility that that will then float away. Fly away, which it eventually will. Okay. So with that being said, what's going on in sensory motor is a whole sort of jumble of trying to control the things that you can't control and not controlling the things that you need to control. So typically a person is trying to push something out of awareness. I don't want to be noticing that, which does not work. And in the process, they're paying attention to it, which keeps it in awareness. Okay, that's number one. Number two is they're directing attention towards it and then wondering, but feeling like they don't have a choice, right? And we'll get there in a second that you do have a choice. And then third of all, they're doing a lot of ruminating about this. You know, wow, what am I going to do about this? How am I going to sleep? How will I navigate being at the movies if I can't stop paying attention to the blinking? How will I How will I be a therapist if I can't stop paying attention to like watching myself do it, whatever it is. So it's a combination of trying to push that awareness, which you can't, directing attention, and rumination proper, analyzing, all of those things coming together. So the first thing that we need to do with, or sort of the crux of the treatment for sensory motor, is teaching people to distinguish between attention and awareness.
Yep.
Okay. So I think it's also important to say here that the distinction between attention and awareness is blurry. And if you try to get that distinction exactly right, the consequence is that you'll just be directing attention towards that and ruminating about that. And so it's actually important to allow that distinction to be blurry. I tell people it's like separating clouds with a feather duster. It's like it's okay that this is not exactly separate. And as an example of that, if you notice somebody, or you know, let's say somebody gave this example in a training, if you notice somebody's red coat, are you paying attention to it? Are you aware of it? In that moment of noticing, that distinction is kind of blurry. And if you get stuck in that moment going, oh no, I'm paying attention, then you're just gonna, you know, cause problems. So it needs to be a sort of gentle, loose distinction. But at this, so yeah, that's an important sort of caveat here. But you wanna distinguish between being aware of something, I know it's there, versus directing attention to it, which is like kind of holding on to it mentally. Yeah. Okay. I have an exercise there's an article called How to Stop Paying Attention on the website. That's a script that helps people to sort of experientially, there's an article called Awareness, Attention, Distraction, and Rumination, which is sort of a description. It goes through the difference among these things. And then there's another one called How to Stop Paying Attention, which is an experiential exercise to sort of show people what the difference is between awareness and attention, because it's the type of thing that you can understand, you know, intellectually, but you kind of need to embody.
Yeah, I agree. Do you want to read it?
Sure. Okay. So I'm literally just going to read the script from the article. So anybody who wants this can go get it, and they can read it in a less annoying voice.
All the links will be in the show notes as well to these articles.
How to Stop Paying Attention. Yeah. This will be the gay Jewish New York version of this script. And if somebody would like their, somebody wants their British version, Stu can make that one for you. A little more soothing. Okay. All right. Should I just jump into it?
Go for it. Yeah.
Okay. So this is an exercise for distinguishing between awareness and attention. Let's start by paying attention to whatever it is you don't want to be paying attention to. Now what I want you to do is to stop directing attention towards whatever that is. It won't leave your awareness, it'll sort of hover there. You're going to let it be there and gently let go of directing your attention towards it. I'm not asking you to actively direct your attention elsewhere, just to let go of directing your attention towards that. Directing attention is like mentally holding onto something. You don't need to grab onto something else. Just let go of that. Allow your attention to wander. This is a passive process, not an active one. You're letting go of actively directing your attention. If it lands on something else, that's fine. That'll happen eventually, but you're not forcing it. If you stop directing your attention towards the thing you're trying not to pay attention to, that thing will eventually wander out of your awareness. And every so often, it'll come back into awareness, or perhaps your attention will shift back to it for a moment, and that's fine. Again, just let it hover in awareness without directing your attention towards it. Eventually, it'll leave your awareness again. In the moments when it comes back into awareness, it might not be possible to tell the difference between awareness and attention, and that's okay. don't worry too much about exactly where that line is. Just do your best to let it be there without directing your attention towards it. Just let it hover in awareness without trying to push it out, and gently let go, directing attention towards it. That's it.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you. And it was calming. So, and I'm sure that wasn't your intention, but it found that way. And in terms of, so people just listening, obviously they can listen back to that again and again and again if they want, not compulsively, but the how to stop ruminating article, because as you go through this exercise, say with a client, you can check in and be like, oh, where is your anxiety at? Mm-hmm. And if it's free, you'll go based on your past episodes. And what I know of your approach is, well, what are you still doing? If it's a free, you're doing something. Mm-hmm. Would you advise kind of understanding that article while kind of thinking about this exercise? Or
sure. So that's a good question. So within how to stop ruminating, there are six things that a person might be doing that even when they don't realize they're ruminating, there are six things that a person might still be doing, and we want to peel them back layer by layer until their anxiety goes all the way down. Mm-hmm. One of those things is attention. So that's the person who says, you know, you say sit there and don't ruminate, and they say, I'm not ruminating, but my anxiety level is still a four. One of the things that might be going on, or a two, one of the things that might be going on is they're still directing their attention towards the problem. And so we would want to say, let the problem be there, but don't engage with it. Let go of directing attention. If they can do that, you know, if they get that distinction, great. And if they don't, then I would take a sidebar from how to stop ruminating, and I would go into awareness versus attention. We would do this script, and then we would come back to how to stop ruminating, having solved the attention piece. And then we go on from there and keep peeling back layers until we get to zero. So this is sort of like a subreddit of how to stop ruminating.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Absolutely.
If a person is allowing something to be in awareness, but completely letting go of directing attention towards it, which again does not mean directing attention towards something else necessarily, right? This isn't about attention, isn't like something that's out holding on to something and you need to put it on something else in order to move it off of the first thing. It's like holding. So you can just let go. Your attention isn't always directed towards something. If you were in math class and you were not paying attention anymore, it's not because you actively directed your attention towards something else. It's because you just let go of paying attention to that, right? So, sorry, I interrupted myself as usual, but going back to, yeah, to that habit, it's a worse habit to interrupt other people. I was with Chrissy Hodges last week and I listened to it, and it was just like, I interrupted so much and it was so bad. And this is my apology to the world and just everybody, please know I'm working on it. Anyway. What's it called? To the extent that you allow it to be in awareness, but stop paying attention to it, your anxiety will still go all the way down. So even though you're aware of it, you won't feel anxious.
Yeah, no, I like that. I'm trying to think. Is it possible to give any examples of past clients who have had somatic OCD and as a way of illustrating this? Because I'm just visualizing people right now that have somatic OCD that may be thinking, this all sounds great in theory, but I don't quite understand it yet or get it.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, this part of a case, what the core fear is, what the rest of the symptoms are, how this fits in, that's different across cases. Yeah. How you treat sensory motor is the same in every single case. It's this. It's distinguishing between, it's eliminating rumination, eliminating analysis, like eliminating rumination proper, and then distinguishing gently between awareness and attention, which I should add, when it comes to rumination, I want people to take an axe to it, like hard. When it comes to distinguishing between attention and awareness, it's softer, it's more gradual. It is not something that you can just get right exactly once and then you're done. It's more of a process. It does take time. This is not one that this is one you have to sort of live. You have to embody it. And you have to sort of practice gently, you know, separating, okay, I'm aware, but don't engage. And I don't mean you're going to say that to yourself. I don't mean you're going to like have a mantra. I just mean it's there. Okay. I'm aware of my whatever it is blinking. And we're okay, that's there, but we're not going to direct attention towards it actively. Again, gently, maybe there's a little attention, but as much as we can, we're going to let go of directing attention and we're not going to ruminate about it. That is the crux. And then in addition to that, the only two types of exposures I would do, let me first of all say the exposure I would never do. I would never do an exposure that involves paying attention to it on purpose in order to like desense it. We know I don't believe in habituation. So we're never trying to like habituate to noticing your blinking. That's actually asking somebody to do the compulsion. The compulsion is directing attention, and now you're doing the compulsion and calling it an exposure. So that I would never do. There are only two very specific exposures I would do. One is a reminder, something that can look like a post-it on a cabinet, that can also look like literally a reminder in your phone that says, reminder. It's anything to bring it into awareness so that the person can practice. The point of that exposure is to show a person that we don't care if it occurs to you. That is not the issue. And even when it occurs to you, you can refrain from directing attention towards it, because we don't want the person to be afraid of this thing coming into their awareness, right? We want them to practice that it can come into awareness. And if you don't direct attention, it will eventually leave and you're fine. Right. So that's one type of exposure. And then the other type of exposure would be anything that's avoided. So if this person avoids going to the movies because they don't want to notice everybody's blinking, for example, then the exposure would be simply doing the thing that you're avoiding. Mm. Right. And the goal is not, as always with me, the goal is not habituation. The goal is to eliminate avoidance.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's the treatment. It's distinguishing between awareness and attention, eliminating any, you know, additional like analysis and rumination. And then those exposures, and that's it. And just sort of living in that.
Yeah.
People really, again, I hesitate because I know that I don't want to say, oh, people get better so fast, right? Every case is different, but people generally get better relative. This is not like it is a really simple treatment. Yeah. It's something you have to, I'm trying to stay away from the word easy, because I know that word is one that people sort of, it can mean different things to different people. It's clean. It's not very complicated. This part of the treatment, treating sensory motor, is not very complicated. It's really just like these pieces, and you just have to do them. You just have to practice.
Yeah. It's a skill. Okay. And I'm going to speak from the voice of my listener with somatic OCD. And what's coming to me is, okay, so Michael, you want me to let go effectively of holding on mentally to this sensation in my leg. You know, I can't stop noticing my left thigh. It feels like it's, I don't know, it's there. I notice it's there all the time. I can't stop paying attention to it.
Well, and I would say right there, I would stop you and I would say, you're aware of it, but you actually can stop paying attention to it. Okay. And we need to distinguish between those two things.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, of course. I'm going to be mindful of what I say now. I'm just going to keep speaking. Sorry. Feel free to keep correcting me.
Interrupting.
Okay. No, it's the right. It was a good introduction for that. So Michael, it's really hard. It's always on my mind. And now you want me to try and just let it be there, but I don't want it to just be there. It's horrible, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think that the thing that's actually causing you the distress is that you are directing attention towards it. You're directing your energies towards the thing that you think is the problem, which is actually causing the problem. You think the problem is being aware. Mm-hmm. And in your efforts to push it out of awareness, you're directing a lot of attention towards it. And so that whole, that dual approach is not working. I don't know if that made sense. Sorry, I got message acted. If you allow it to be there without trying to push it away, but also without directing attention towards it and without sitting there thinking about it and thinking how you're going to handle this and will you be able to sleep and how will you get through the day and how will you pay attention to this conversation, etc. If you let go of that stuff, but don't fight the awareness piece, you will feel better. Your distress will go away. And then eventually this will kind of fade into the background. Because what happens is that right now, every time it comes into awareness, you get frantic, you get scared, because every time you get stuck. If you learn that you don't get stuck, if you learn that you feel like you know what to do, then it won't be scary. And I can speak from somewhat from personal experience. I didn't have somatic OCD. That wasn't my issue. But in the process of treating people with it and trying to sort of enter into it, I like induced it in myself and then got out of it. But I can say, like, in sort of trying on for size the treatment that I was recommending, it was scary for the few minutes. It was really scary. And it really felt like, oh God, like, what if I can never get out of this? And I've done that there have been a few times when I've tried it on for size. And but now when I talk about it, I know that you don't get stuck. I know that I can get out of it. And so when I talk about blinking, I don't go, oh God, what if I get stuck here? I go, yeah, I know that I don't get stuck. Yeah. And that's sort of what we want to cultivate for people. So that when it comes into awareness, they don't get scared, they don't get frantic, they don't start ruminating, they don't start directing attention. And so this whole thing kind of falls apart and fades into the background.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And with this theme in particular, when you see clients with this theme, how often do they have other not neutral obsessions? As in violence, sexual, contamination? Mm-hmm. Was it usually that this seems to be the core and everything else?
You know, I don't know if I know the answer to that. I can tell you that I've seen cases where it was really, have I ever seen a case that was literally just sensory motor, period? Let me think. I think the answer is no. Okay. I think that there was always at least a little, even if that was sort of the main concern, I think there was always at least a little other stuff. Yeah, I think it's very rare. You know, this is why I think that when they talk about like subtypes of OCD, I think it's very confusing to people because I talk about themes, which is, I know the language that you use, because you can have multiple themes. When they talk about a type of OCD, people feel like, oh, I don't just have, I don't just have one. I have like three. But yeah. So the same is true for sensory motor. Maybe if you're a past patient where you only had the one issue and I'm forgetting, I apologize. But I think everybody's had some other stuff. Yeah. 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 I'm thinking through. Everybody I'm thinking of has had some other stuff also.
Yeah. Because of course, it's a similar process in the brain that's happening. It's latching on to a feeling as opposed to a thought.
So that's, you know, the way I would look at it is that, I'm not saying you're wrong. That's a valid, like, neurological way to look at it. I think that the sensory motor emanates from the same emotional conflicts that the rest of a person's symptoms do. And so it's like a container. It's a symbol. It's a thing that past emotional conflicts have landed on. And usually they've landed on some other things also.
Okay.
I mean, I know we're not going to go into the psychoanalytic.
I was going to say, this is another segue to...
We'll talk about the psychoanalytic piece another time. So I think everything, all the person's symptoms always go back to the same core fear and the same fear of loss of attachment. But normally there's more than just a single symptom.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree with your view too. Okay, I'm just looking for my questions, making sure. Do you know, I think that's all of my questions on somatic OCD, and I'm trying to wreck my brain to think what my listeners may still want to know about this.
I have something to add.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
I think that, and I'm not going on a rant, I promise. But I think that mindfulness is something that's often used for this that I think does not work. because one of the issues with mindfulness, and again, I'm not going on a rant, but I'm not anti-mindfulness. As people know, I just don't think it's a treatment for OCD. I think it's, you know, good in general, but not for this issue. Mindfulness done correctly would tell a person not to analyze. Right. But I don't think that mindfulness adequately distinguishes between awareness and attention. So if a person is mindfully aware of something, that can involve directing attention towards it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, okay, it's there. I'm noticing it. I'm mindful of it. If I'm meditating, right? We're trying not to engage with it in the sense that we're not analyzing it. I'm saying from a mindfulness perspective, but nobody's saying like, it's there, we're aware of it, but stop directing attention towards it, right? So I think that that distinction between attention and awareness, as far as I mean, I'm not an expert on mindfulness, but I did take MBSR, and to the extent that I am familiar with mindfulness, no distinction was ever made in mindful awareness between attention and awareness. And so I think that having somebody use mindfulness for this without distinguishing between attention and awareness is just going to lead them to direct attention towards it, which is not going to work. So I feel like I said that in a very
No, it does. I'm just trying to think because I'm trying to think on the side of the people that are hugely pro-mindfulness for OCD. And in my experience with mindfulness, I get what you're saying. I'm trying to visualize because for me, I feel like when I first heard your model, I was like, you've given me words to something I was doing before that I could never really put into words that I think I picked up from ACT and from mindfulness, parts of ACT and from mindfulness. Obviously, I'm not saying that your approach is different, but like, I guess, so with mindfulness, I'm trying to think when, or more so when I meditate, historically, I should say. I can edit these pauses. I'm just, yeah. So I was letting things go. I'm not saying I was ever, but if you think about like the clouds in the sky or leaves in the stream, you're noticing, but you're not attaching. You're just.
Yeah. Right. So the worst version of that, which is to be clear, that we're not talking about, is if somebody were ruminating.
Yeah.
And the ruminative thoughts were the thoughts they were being mindful of, and leaves on a stream, and each of them is rumination. That's definitely not good. That's not what we're talking about, right? Hopefully, even the ACT. Hopefully, the good. There are many ACT providers who would also say yes, that's not what we want. Yeah. Although I think there are others who don't distinguish. Fine. We're talking within the world of people who get that rumination is a problem and who say don't ruminate, and who say when you're being mindful, don't ruminate. I would say that within leaves on a stream, there is no, you're still directing attention. You're still engaging with it. And that might be better than getting embroiled with it, you know, meaning that might be a step in the right direction, but I think it will keep you stuck and not allow you to really forget about this and let it go because you're still engaging with it. You're still directing attention towards it.
Yeah, I know. I hear what you're saying. I think this is where you were saying about with the feather duster, and it's so nuanced that I'm really, really struggling to.
I'll give you. There's a quote from Russ Harris that included in my article. He says, "I can find it for you." And I thought this is a beautiful quote because it perfectly captures my problem with this. He says. And again, by the way, if I'm misunderstanding anything, please tell, like, anybody write in. If I'm misunderstanding what he said, by all means, let me know. I'm not looking to be right. Okay, he says. He says, paying attention with openness, curiosity, flexibility, and kindness. There you have it. Paying attention.
Yeah, just read that one more time.
He defines mindful awareness, I think, the quote that I have here is paying attention with openness, curiosity, flexibility, and kindness.
Yeah.
Which is still paying attention. It is still engaging. You're still there. I mean, how can you expect to, you know, forget about the OCD thought or the OCD question? How can you expect that to sort of fade into the background if you're directing attention towards it?
Yeah.
Especially in the context of, I think we've, you know, gone far afield from sensory motor, but especially in sensory motor where the whole issue is directing attention, directing attention mindfully is still directing attention.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting, it's hard for me to defend that. But from a general, I guess what I'm saying is for me personally, there's still something in the way I learned to meditate that I feel really syncs up with your approach. Now, I may have learned in a way that taught me in some way not to pay attention, not to, you know,
be there but not engage, come back to the breath.
Exactly. Or
wait, even that, it's good for meditating, but the idea that we have to, like I said at the beginning, you have to think, I have to think not just about what I want to say, but also about all the ways it could be misinterpreted.
Yeah.
So even if somebody wants to say there's a correct way to meditate, and really, if you're doing it right, it doesn't look like that, blah, blah, blah. My question is, the person reading the book or listening to the podcast on meditation, how are they doing it?
Yeah.
Right. So I think that that person is at worst ruminating and paying attention to it, but at best, they're still directing attention towards it, or they're trying to use the breath as bad distraction. They're trying to push it out of awareness. Like, okay, I'll pay attention to my breath and then push that away, which doesn't work.
Yeah, fair enough. I will caveat that there are many types of meditation, many that I don't understand either, that I'm just going to caveat there for any real meditation experts. They're like, you don't understand.
My answer then would be, I'm sure, even if you're right, what I understand is what the people reading the books understand. It's what I was, when I was struggling with my own OCD and reading the ACT workbook and reading, you know, Full Catastrophe Living and reading whatever, which in defense of, you know, Jon Kabat-Zinn is great, just not for OCD, right? It's not a problem with that. It's a problem with applying it to a problem it doesn't solve. That's what matters. What matters is not the correct way to do it. What matters is how people understand it, what people think it means.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, that's all the questions I had on it. Did you have anything else worth adding, do you think, on this topic?
I don't think so. Let me think. I want to look at one thing.
Yeah. So I'll put all the links, to all the articles you mentioned in the show notes.
So the things I wanted to add, some common questions that people have about this. So one common issue that people have is trying to stop paying attention to one thing by paying attention to another thing. And this, I alluded to this before, this people like this are thinking about attention as I wish I could show people what I'm doing with my hand, but sort of like, it's like your hand is always extended. Your attention is always extended. And if you want to take it off of one thing, you have to latch it onto another thing. And that's not how it works, right? Like I said about the math class, you can just, attention is like holding on mentally. And what you want to do is just let go. You don't need to hold on to something else. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't get involved in something else. You totally can. And I hope that happens, right? But we don't want people to try to use distraction to push it out of their awareness or to actively shift their attention to something else. For further discussion, see the article called How to Stop Paying Attention, as well as the article called Awareness, Attention, Distraction, and Rumination. I know, not the best title. Okay. Fine. So those two articles delineate this further, but I just want to sort of allude to it here. It's important that we're not talking about pulling your attention off of something by putting it on something else. Okay, that's number one. The other thing I wanted to add was, this is just a common question that people ask, even though it's easily answerable. People say, well, what about when I'm lying in bed at night and I have nothing else to pay attention to? And the answer is, it's exactly the same thing. Like, it doesn't matter that you have nothing else to pay attention to, because we're not asking you to direct your attention towards something else. We're just saying, let go of this, right? And don't ruminate about it. Let it be there in awareness, but don't direct attention. Let go. And that's it. So, this is a common one. I think a lot of people with sensory motor struggle with it, especially in bed, which is understandable. And a lot of them are afraid. Sometimes part of how it leads to the core fear is they're afraid that they won't be able to sleep and then XYZ consequence. So it's important to say that the same rules apply when you're lying in bed at night. It is not different.
Yeah, I think what's coming to me is, in terms of practice and it being a skill, is almost like, you know, many of us will lay in bed at night and it may not even be an OCD thing, just like we said something at work or someone said something to us or there was that thing on bbc.co.uk that, you know, whatever bothered us or whatever.
We're ruminating.
Exactly. And to practice what you've said and, you know, the articles in those times. So like, mm-hmm. you know, practice when the sea is calm as opposed to when you're in a storm type of thing.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think those are mechanically the same thing, mm-hmm. whether they're part of an OCD picture or, yeah, they're analytical.
We're still latching onto it. Yeah.
Right. And what I want people to know is that they have a choice. They always have a choice about analytical thinking. It's not about whether something is objectively compulsive or objectively rumination. Mm-hmm. It's about you knowing that this is analytical thinking and therefore, and attention, and therefore you have a choice about whether or not you want to do this.
Yep.
So if you're lying in bed at night and you're thinking about the example that, to give a personal example, I was lying in bed at night a year ago, whatever it was, somebody had said something homophobic and I was like writing my email, my angry email in my mind. And I was not able to go to sleep. And I said to myself, you know, Michael Greenberg, of all people, you know what you're doing right now. So you can't have it both ways. Either you stop writing the email in your head, you stop ruminating, or you and go to sleep, or you don't. If you want to write this now, fine, but don't pretend that you're going to go to sleep because you're not. Right. And I chose, because this is about agency, I said, you know what? That's true. I want to write this email. So I got up, I wrote the email, I never sent it. And then I was able to go to sleep. So it's about knowing that you have control over this. It's about agency. It's about knowing that you have a choice.
Yeah. Yeah. It is quite fun to write those imaginary emails in your head though, isn't it? Yeah. You really hate
it. I really meant I still have the fantasy that I'm going to send it when the time is right, but it's been a year.
Fair enough. Okay, no, that's good. Was there anything else to add, do you think?
I can think of. Cool. Yeah, I think I spelled out my ideas pretty thoroughly in the articles. So
yeah.
If anybody needs more information, there's an article called Treating Sensory Motor OCD.
Oh, of course, yeah. Well, I think it's been a good explanation for people with sensory motor OCD, somatic OCD. And I think generally just for every other theme, there's something in this episode. It's an extension of the first two.
Yeah, it's basically the idea of attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Well, look, thank you once again for your time.
Yeah, thanks really so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. And if you want to find out more about NoCD, visit go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.